Thanks for checking out our weekly podcast. Our mission at Grace is to help people worship God, connect to others, and serve both. We hope that you'll be blessed and encouraged by this week's message. For more information about Grace, you can follow us on Facebook or check out our website at experiencegrace.church.
Thank you, John, for sharing that. I love this passage of Scripture in 1 Corinthians chapter 3 because it reminds me of a lot of the different people that God has allowed me to serve with. And when I was in college, I was between my freshman and my sophomore year that I was given the opportunity to travel with a group called Neighborhood Bible Time. You guys are familiar with Neighborhood Bible Time, anybody? They go around and they recruit different Bible college students to go to different churches and basically put on VBSs. And so half of the summer I had the opportunity to travel with one of my best friends from college. His name was Terry. We were in 9 different churches in 5 different states throughout the summer. And my friend Terry is about my height, but he weighed about 260, 270, and he was a beast of a man. His name, they would call him Moose, is what they would call him, just a big old boy. And so we got a chance to travel around, and people would give us food, and they would give us accommodations and different things like that. And inevitably, they would, you know, stock the fridge for us, and Terry being Moose, he would eat all the food. It was so frustrating to me because I love cheese, extra sharp cheddar cheese. I just love it. And they would bring us big old blocks of it, and Terry would literally just eat it like right off the block, and he would eat an entire block in one sitting. And so that was one of the things that was irritating about it to me. But one of the other things that made it a little more irritating is that we were forced to follow a lot of different rules that summer. We weren't allowed to drink any soda. We weren't allowed to watch any television, listen to any radio. We didn't even have cell phones back then. You know, all those different things. And we had to get up at 5 a.m. every morning. And so the reason for that was that we had a lot going on. It was always busy, and they wanted us to get up and be sharp. And so we'd have to get up at 5 a.m. and try reading your Bible and praying. And that doesn't always go very well at 5 a.m. in the morning. So one day we're in a basement. I'm on one side of the room. He's clear on the other side. And 5 a.m. goes, the alarm clock goes off. And I get up, Terry gets up, and we each kind of stay in bed, and we're kind of, you know, reading our Bibles in separate spots. And I can see Terry laying flat on his back, and he's got his Bible held up like this, you know. And as he's doing his thing, I'm doing my thing. And then all of a sudden, I hear this really rhythmic breathing, just... And I thought, sure enough, he's falling asleep. And I look over, and Terry's got his Bible flat on his chest. His eyes are closed. And I said, Terry, what are you doing? And he goes, I was praying, man. I was praying. I was like, yeah, okay. Yeah, you were praying, right? We were laboring together during that summer, and we had an incredible time. In this passage of Scripture, that is all about growing up. It's talking about what spiritual maturity looks like. Paul is trying to get them to see that spiritual maturity requires laboring together. He's trying to get them to see that spiritual growth is a team project. As a matter of fact, this is what we're going to call today's message. It's the theme of these verses, that we're going to talk about the teamwork of spiritual growth. Now, when we say this, I think if the Corinthians were to see this title, the people at Corinth would be like, yeah, that's what we're talking about. We've been talking about being on a team, and that's what we're so worked up about. We're on Team Paul. And the other people are like, no, 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 we're on Team Apollos. And the others are like, Team Peter. And they're arguing back and forth about these things. But Paul reminds them of something very important. If you'll see it again in verse number 9, where he says, for we are laborers together with, help me out now, God, there it is. We are laborers together with God, not laborers together with Paul or Peter or Apollos, although those things will come into play here in just a few minutes. But he's trying to get them to see that ultimately, if spiritual growth is going to happen in our lives and in the lives of others, we need to remember that we are laboring together with God. And there are 3 things that we see that happen when you labor together with God. Number 1, God gives the responsibility. When it comes to laboring, God is the one that gives the responsibilities. They were arguing about personalities, and Paul says in verse number 5, he says, who then is Paul? And who is Apollos? But ministers by whom ye believed, even as the Lord gave to every man. They said, we're of Paul, we're of Apollos, and he says, are you not carnal? In verse number 4, and then in verse 5, he says, who are we anyway? He's very self-deprecating in the way that he talks about himself. He says, we are just ministers. Now, when you see that, you might think, well, yeah, they're ministers. It was like Paul was the senior pastor, Apollos was like the next senior pastor, or whatever, you know. But that's not the word that's used here. The word that's used here is diakonos. Can anybody think of a word in the English language for diakonos? It's transliterated, it's deacons, right? He's saying that we are the servants within the congregation. As a matter of fact, this word deacons is used to talk about when someone is just simply coming along to assist. As a matter of fact, it would oftentimes be used when someone was doing a task that was considered unskilled. You didn't have to be a pro. Anybody could come along and help someone do this. And so he's essentially saying, like, who are we? We were just the unskilled laborers that came along and just tried to help you along. He gets even more self-deprecating as he continues through here, because in verse number 6, he compares himself, Apollos, and Peter to farmers. Now, farming nowadays is a very legitimate job, right? It was a legitimate job back then as well, but it was kind of looked down upon by the people in Corinth, because the people in Corinth were the elites, right? The people in Corinth, this is a trade town. I mean, this is where we do the big business kind of stuff, and they would look down on manual laborers. Back 2 weeks ago, we had a night of worship, and Jordan Riggenbach did a great job. Our church intern did a great job bringing the devotion that night, and he was talking about the goat, the greatest of all time, right? And he brought up, I believe, the goat, Michael Jordan, which is what most people believe. Now, there are other people that believe LeBron James is the goat, and they are wrong, okay? But how many of you guys would agree with me on that, just out of curiosity? Yeah, there we go. Yeah, oh, we're getting some applause out of that one. Yeah, so yeah, we talk about the goat. Now, we could go around the room and we could self-identify as I'm an MJ guy or I'm a LeBron guy, you know, and we could go around the room and do that. But what he's trying to get them to see here is that Paul's use of the word farmers would be similar to us going, I'm more of a water boy guy. Not Adam Sandler, all right, for those of you that are thinking that way. I'm more of an equipment manager guy, is essentially what he's saying. They were trying to say, well, I'm of Paul and I'm of Apollos. And Paul says, I'm just the water boy, bro. I'm just the equipment manager. I'm washing the laundry over here, right? He clears the air by acknowledging the foolishness of picking sides. Who is Paul? Who's Apollos? But then look what he says in verse 5 at the end of it. He says, even as the Lord gave to every man needs a minister, a deacon, someone that is serving, someone that is coming alongside of them, someone that is interested in their spiritual maturity, someone that is investing in them and trying to help them along the way. Every one of us needs someone like that, because the Christian life is not designed to be lived in isolation. And God did give the people at Corinth three pretty good ministers, right? Like if you were looking up a church to go to in Corinth and the church of Corinth came up and you looked on the staff page, our pastor is the Apostle Paul, our assistant pastor is Apollos, and Peter, you ever heard of him? Yeah, he's on our church staff too. How many of you guys are like, I think I might check that place out, right? I'm sorry you're stuck with Josh, Andrew, and Mark, but here's what we get here. Is we're seeing that God did assign the people of Corinth these three men. They were given to them by God. But what I'd like for us to see as well is that alternatively, the Corinthians were given to Paul. The Corinthians were assigned to Apollos. The Corinthians were given to Peter. Like a captain or a coach picking teams, God chose them to be the team captains, and then he gave them their assignments. He gave them their responsibilities. Don't fall into this trap of believing that God only does this with ministers, that God only does this with professional pastors, with people that are on staff at churches. I would contend that every believer is given the responsibility to help others grow spiritually. Just as God had assigned, it says, even as the Lord gave to every man, God has given to each of us people within our sphere of influence that he wants us to help grow and spiritually mature. You say, well, I'm not sure if that's, you know, for me, I'm not sure if that's really what the Bible says. I mean, why do we pay pastors in the first place? But stop and think about all of the commands that we have been given to love one another, to serve one another, to come alongside of and encourage one another and edify one another, to build up one another, to comfort one another. And so the question before us today, as we're talking about spiritual maturity, who is it that God has assigned to us? Who is it that God has put into our sphere of influence that God has said, here, you need to invest in this person? Just like he had told Paul, Apollos, and Peter, invest in the people at Corinth, who has he given to us? You know, a good place to start would be to look at the people that live within the walls of your own house. To stop and think about how I am helping the people within my home to grow spiritually. When you think about Paul and Peter and Apollos in this passage, they had a vision for the people of Corinth. They wanted to see the people of Corinth mature spiritually. What is the vision for the people that God has placed within your house? Like, it's easy to say, well, I got a vision. I want my kid to be, you know, I want them to get a good job, right? I want them to learn how to handle money. We have a vision for where we want them to go, oftentimes athletically and those sorts of things. But what about the vision for their spiritual maturity? Our student ministries that we have been blessed with, and we've had several of the people that lead in our student ministries read the passage, because we want you to see the people that are investing in your children. We have nursery, we've got Biddy Church, we've got Junior Church, we've got teens on Wednesday nights, we've got College and Career. College and Career for throwing you guys in the lump with the student ministries there, but we have people that are investing in all of them. And the reason that we have these ministries is not so that we can just have activities to keep them busy. You know, the reason we're doing this is not just so that they're kind of babysitting so that, you know, we don't have a lot of distractions in the auditorium. No, the reason we're doing it is because we're interested in their spiritual formation. We have a vision for them to grow spiritually. God has assigned them to us, and we take that job very seriously. We want them to know Jesus. We want them to love Jesus and live for Jesus. When he's talking in this passage here, he talks about how he planted and Apollos watered. When you talk about planting, it carries the idea of planting the gospel. Someone hearing the truth that the only way a person can be in a relationship with God is through understanding that we're sinners and our relationship with God is broken because of that sin. But Jesus died for us. The sinless Son of God left heaven and lived a perfect life, and he died on the cross, and he was buried, and he rose again. And so that's planting, and watering carries the idea of daily nurturing, right? Daily coming along and watering the ground and getting rid of the weeds and kind of preparing that ground so that growth can happen. And that's what we are called to do with the people that God has placed in our sphere of influence. Like, think about this for a second. Last week we asked, on a scale of 1 to 10, how spiritually mature are you? Maybe that number's gone up or down in the last week, I don't know. But the question today is not, on a scale of 1 to 10, how spiritually mature are you? The question that is before us today is, on a scale of 1 to 10, how spiritually mature are the people that God has assigned to you? And with God's help, we can plant, we can water, we can be concerned about their spiritual maturity. Not only are we talking about the people within our own home, but the next question is, like, who has God placed around you? Who is it that lives next to you? Or who is it that works right alongside of you? Or who is it that you see on a regular basis? Like, I want us to recognize that these relationships are not an accident. The people that God has allowed us to be close to, he wants us to invest in. I read this statement that a man said just this last week, and he said this: so many of us live in a comfortable collection of terminally casual relationships. We have a collection of terminally casual relationships where we may have a vision for them. Man, I hope their marriage is better, or I hope they can do better with raising their kids, or whatever it may be. But what he's calling us to here is to see this spiritual growth. We are to be a tool of God's work in others' hearts and lives, with a heart like Paul's heart for the Corinthians. The people that we live with, the people that we live around, and then the people that we're drawn to. I couldn't help but think of just this last week. The Larsons were out of town, and they lead the College and Career Group, C20 is what we call it. And so there's two ladies in our church that have a burden for young people, Marilyn and Bev. They both are about 104 years old. And are they in here? Then I can say that, right? No, they're really old. I'm not just joking around. They are seniors, and they just love young people. And what was so cool to me is that whenever the Larsons said, hey, we're going to be out of town, the first people they thought of to come help lead the C20 on Wednesday night was Marilyn and Bev. And so just right back there in that corner, there was Marilyn and Bev and about 20 young people sitting around and walking through the discussion questions from the sermon from last week. And I just think that's the coolest thing in the world, because they have this burden for them, but it's not just like, oh, I got this burden for kids. They're like, I got this burden. I'm going to do something about it. And they jumped in. And so the question before us today is, who has God assigned to us? Who has God given us the responsibility to lead? The people within our home, the people we live around, or the people that we're drawn to? Serving others with a goal of spiritual maturity will not only help them, but it'll help us. The Corinthians were not helping others grow spiritually. They were hindering not only others' spiritual growth, but thereby they were stunting their own growth. The second thing that we see in laboring together with God is this, is that God does give the increase. God does, He is the one that gives the growth. There are so many things in our modern living that are so awesome because they just work. I was thinking of I had a Buick LaCrosse for a while, and there was a Buick app that you could download. And on that app, you could start your car from anywhere in the world. And I think that is one of the coolest things. How many of you guys have that capability on your vehicle? Is anybody? Because I'm totally jealous because I don't have that anymore. But I thought it was super cool. And so whenever it was cold out, if we were driving back to somewhere where I had to get in my car, if I was 10 or 15 minutes out, boop, push the button, and I get there, and the car is already warm, and it was amazing, right? I loved it. And it's just awesome when it just works. I mean, it's kind of nice. Last week, we had an issue with the air conditioner in here, you know? It's kind of nice when you go to you push a button, and like cold air comes out. It's awesome. But on the flip side of that, how many guys are like, you go and you push the button and it doesn't work? And you're like, stupid thing. Does anyone else do that? Like, if I push the button to start my car and I got there, man, this life is so tough. My car is not hot when I got there, you know? It's like first world problems, right? But we love it when things just work. And when they don't, it gets so incredibly frustrating. Look what he says in verse 6. He says, I planted, Apollos watered, but God's the one that gave the increase or the growth. So then, is he that planteth anything? Neither he that watereth, but God is the one that gives the increase. In these verses, Paul doesn't compare spiritual maturity to a vehicle that just works or a phone that just works. He compares it to farming. He's making this comparison to farming because just like in modern farming, we've got fancy dirt that you can go buy. I mean, you can buy dirt for like 15 bucks for a bag of it. You know, I need to get into that business, right? To selling dirt. But you can go buy fancy dirt. You can buy fancy chemicals. You can make sure you got the irrigation system and you get special lights and everything else. And then you take that corn of wheat or that corn or the tomatoes or whatever it is, and that seed, you put it in the ground, and we did everything right. And what do we expect? We expect the heat to come on, right? We expect the fan to turn on. We put the seed in the ground. We expect growth to just automatically happen. If we do everything we're supposed to do, then growth is supposed to happen, right? These verses remind us that we can plant and we can water, but God is the one that ultimately is going to give the growth. We lose sight of the truth of what happens when you put a seed in the ground. A seed, a miracle happens that a little seed dies and then life comes out of it. It's a beautiful picture of what we see in Jesus Christ, but it's also a beautiful reminder that no matter what we're doing in spiritually investing in others, we can do everything right, and sometimes the growth isn't going to be there, and it's not your fault. God is the one that is giving the increase. It wasn't that Paul and Apollos didn't take the credit for the spiritual growth. They couldn't take the credit for the spiritual growth. It'd kind of be like that farmer that I don't know anything about farming other than what I've just shared with you, all right? But it's kind of like the farmer that has a bumper crop, which I'm told is a good thing, but it's kind of like the farmer that has a bumper crop and then he walks around with his chest out like, huh? Huh? I got 2 times the yield this year. Is that how it works, Luke? I got 2.5 times the yield this year. That's what Luke does. He's a farmer, and he just walks around with his chest puffed out, like, look what I did, right? Yeah. Doing one of those numbers. No, it's foolish, because it's not that you didn't take the credit. You can't take the credit. I mean, you put all of the work in, but ultimately we trust God with the increase. God has assigned us the responsibility to minister to others, to try to help them mature spiritually, but we need to remember that when they do, God is the one that gets the glory for it. I was just thinking of your dad, Bob Shum, that just passed away a couple of weeks ago. I think it was the day after his 96th birthday, right? Or a couple days after, somewhere in there. And Bob was such a good man. If you didn't have a chance to know him, you missed out. But Bob was a farmer. And as I had a chance to talk to the family and had a chance to listen to the family at the funeral and talking about their grandpa and their dad and talking about the ways that he took pride in his fields. I don't know what taking pride. I think they said he wanted straight rows. That's important, I guess, in farming. And no weeds. That's the other big one, right? And so the ditches mowed or whatever farmer people do. Whatever it was, Bob was proud of his, right? Because he was a hard-working guy. And he put a lot of effort into it. Bob took pride in having these things done right. But when I was sitting at the funeral and I was listening to the people give eulogies about his life, they talked about how hyper aware he was when God blessed him extra. And they said on those years where every year he would make sure all the rows were straight, and ditches were mowed, and no weeds and everything else, every year he'd do the same thing, but there were years where God would just give him extra. And he would intentionally bless the people in his family and make sure to tell them, the reason I'm blessing you is because God has blessed me. You see, he recognized that God gave me the assignment to be a farmer, but I am, as far as what comes out of that field, God's in control of that. God is the one that gives the increase. He's the one that gives the growth. It's a huge red flag, and quite frankly, a mark of our need for spiritual maturity when someone is taking credit for something that God did. It's important to remember, spiritual maturity, God is the one that gives the increase. Now, on the other side of that, it's just as true. If it is not within my power to change others, then I have no responsibility to get them to grow. Some of us need to hear this. If it is not within my power to change them, then I have no responsibility to change them. If you're like me, you probably have racked your mind trying to figure out, how can I make this work? You've probably racked your brain and talked to everybody you can think of. What else can I do to make them change? Has anyone else had this conversation before? We're in our brain just trying to figure out what we can do. And I just want you to know, that's a heavy load to bear. And quite honestly, it's a foolish load to bear. Because you can't bring the increase. Only God can bring the increase. So ultimately, if that's true, this is a faith issue. It's not a works issue. It's not a matter of you not putting in enough or you not thinking hard enough. It's just a matter of I'm not trusting God to do what only He can do. I plant, I water, I try to be faithful, and then like the farmer, I rest my head at night in the sovereign plan of our holy God. Are you working as though the results are dependent upon you? I love this statement. We are not called to be fruitful. We're called to be faithful. We are not called to be fruitful. We are called to be faithful. And I know some of you that have been around the Bible for a while, you're like, whoa, wait a second. The Bible says you shall know them by their fruits, right? And we're supposed to bear much fruit, and you'd be correct. And I want you to see the passage that talks about that in John 15. This is what it says. Jesus says, I am the true vine, and my Father is the husbandman, the farmer. Every branch in me that beareth not fruit, he taketh away. And every branch that beareth fruit, he purgeth it, that it may bring forth more fruit. Now, you are clean through the word which I have spoken unto you. Abide in me, and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit by itself, except it does what? Abides in the vine. No more can you, except you abide in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. He that abideth in me and I in him, the same bringeth forth much fruit, for without me you can do nothing. What I see him saying here is not get busy, work harder, bear fruit. No, I see him saying abide in me, abide in me, abide in me. What's he calling him to do? Be faithful. Walk with Jesus. Trust Jesus. Put your faith in Jesus. Entrust them to Jesus. And as I am faithful, I will trust that God is the one that brings the fruit. Because ultimately, God is infinitely more invested in them than we could ever be. He wants to partner with you. He wants to love them through you, and we can trust him with the increase. In verse 9, he compares them. He says, you are God's husbandry or God's field, and you are God's building. I don't know a whole lot about farming, but I know that when you plant something in the ground, it takes a while. You know, it doesn't, you plant the seed and boom, you got a fence in your front yard 10 feet high. You know, it doesn't work that way. It takes a while. Same thing with a building. Whenever you start building something, your building doesn't just go up right away. It takes time. These things don't happen in one day. They don't happen in one conversation. We can trust that God is working. We can trust that he knows what he's doing. We can trust that he's using us. We can trust him. So in laboring together with God, number one, God gives the responsibility. Number two, God gives the increase. Lastly, God gives partnerships. He gives the partnership. Look what it says in verse 8. Now, he that planteth, which would be Paul, and he that watereth, which would be Apollos, are one. They are one. They're on a team. They are partners. And every man shall receive his own reward according to his own labor. Now, we'll talk more about the end of that verse in the next time we come to this passage, because he talks more about rewards and different things like that in the upcoming verses. But at the beginning of this verse, he says that me and Apollos, we're one. We're a partnership. We're a team. They were unified. They had the same rank. They were working together. Essentially, he was saying, look, we are not in competition. We are in cooperation. When it comes to spiritual maturity, we're not trying to compete by, well, I did the spiritual maturing of these people, and he didn't do as much spiritual maturing. In this. I mean, there's no competition here. We are cooperating in this. I had the chance to be a high school basketball coach for about 6 years, and during the 6 years, I had a lot of people that loved to labor together, but then I had the other guys. You know what I'm talking about? The ball hogs, the guy that doesn't want to pass, the guy that wants to do it all himself, he dribbles too much. You guys ever play with somebody like that? Can't stand them, right? Why don't you like them? Because they ruin it for everybody else. It limits the whole team when someone is in competition with their own team. But when we are cooperating, not only are we able to use our talents and our abilities, but we also are able to find encouragement. We are able to find accountability. When we get sucked into these us versus them battles, we are revealing our lack of spiritual maturity. Listen, this stuff happens in churches all the time. Us versus them. It can be the children's ministry. It's, well, we've got our ministry over here against the youth ministry. It's us versus them. What you'll see a lot of times, it's the younger people versus the older people. Well, they like things one way, and I like things another way. Look up here. Let me be really transparent with you. If you have an us versus them mentality about the things that are taking place in this church, you are spiritually immature and in need of spiritual growth. And if that is offensive to you, and you say, I'm out, I'm not surprised. He says, look, we are laborers together. We're on the same team. In the same team, you don't have to like all the same things. When you're on the same team, you don't have to do all the same things. But we do have to agree that we have the same goal and we have the same leader, and that is the person of Jesus Christ. Look, even if we feel like we're right and they're wrong, look what he says in verse number 9. He says, for we are laborers together with God. They're God's farm, or they're God's land anyway. They're God's building anyway. Look, was Paul frustrated with the people at Corinth? Yes. All right. They were doing a lot of very dumb things. He was absolutely frustrated with them, but he still sought to minister to them. Look, when we believe that we are on the same team, God is just working on their building, on their field. When you believe this, it changes the way you handle conflict. When you believe, hey, we may not see everything eye to eye, but we're on the same team, it changes the way we view them. It changes the way we interact with others. I was talking with John before the service last week, and it wasn't about someone in our church, but the illustration still is applicable, I think. We were talking about how you see some wild things in the world, right? And we were talking about because it had come up in the sermons for a couple weeks, the whole gender thing, and we were talking about how he was talking specifically about a transgender person that was a cart person or something at a grocery store over near where he lives. And what I've heard a lot of Christians say a lot of times is it's almost like this judgmental, like, oh, do you believe? And we get all frustrated and mad and angry. But I was encouraged by John. Because what John said, he said, could you imagine if that person believed the gospel? Could you imagine the difference that it would make in his life and the lives of others if that person would just believe the gospel of Jesus Christ? And as I was reading through this passage, I was thinking, that's the way we need to view the world around us. That's the way we need to view one another. Instead of getting mad and getting frustrated and getting angry and thinking it's us versus them. Look, no, we're pointing people to Jesus. We want to see Jesus work in their lives. And by God's grace, we can be a part of that spiritual maturity as we plant and water in their lives. I'll conclude by sharing a couple pictures with you. This first picture is of our garden last year. My wife's going to be upset that I share this with you. But on the left, this is early on. Those flowers, what's the phrase you used last night? They were with Andrew. Are we allowed to use teen slang? It was, Andrew says, I can't say it. They were popping off. Did I use that right? You guys hear this? Anyway, they were doing good. They were bussing, right? You want me to keep going? No, the garden was doing well, right? It was doing good. This year, check this out. I took that picture yesterday. That's our garden this year. Why you reckon our garden looks like that? So much different than it did just 1 year ago. How does this happen? Very simple. This year, we were preoccupied with other things. My wife had a surgery on her foot. We were still trying to financially recover from two daughters getting married. I don't think that'll ever happen. We had a lot of other things going on. And quite frankly, we chose to invest our time in those other things rather than on the garden. You know, the same thing was happening at Corinth. They had spiritual divisions that were distracting them from healthy growth, right? We've talked about those spiritual divisions over personalities and preferences. There were also sinful distractions that kept them from spiritual maturity and growth. There was immorality and drunkenness and suing one another, all of these different things. The spiritually immature person looks at their lives and the lives of those that are not spiritually mature that look like this, and they go, God, why don't you do something? Look at their life. It's full of weeds, and it's not fruitful, and there's a lot of pain that's associated with this. God, why don't you just do something? And I would contend he is. He's stirring in our hearts to do something about it. He's told us, I've assigned them to you. Have you been planting? Have you been watering? Or have we been judgmental? Have we been comparing ourselves with other people and all that other stuff? I think God is allowing us to see today that people that invest in us allow us to grow spiritually. I'm so thankful for the people that invested in my life. You might think that you would automatically revert to the pastors that had invested in my life, and that's absolutely true. I've had some great pastors that have invested in me. But I'm thankful for guys from Danvers Baptist Church in Danvers, Illinois, like Mike Ballard. Mike Ballard is just a regular old guy. He worked at DMI over in Goodfield for most of his life, and he was just faithful to church. I remember as a 16-year-old boy going out and knocking on people's doors with Mike Ballard because he was investing in me. I think of Amanda Sidney's dad, Grizz Wilson. Grizz invested in me, and I just love the guy. I can remember. Now, he was a little rough around the edges. And you go into his office at 6 a.m., he'd be smoking a ciggy every morning, but he had his Bible open to Proverbs, and he loved Jesus, right? And so it was quite a thing. But you know what? Grizz invested in me. I think of people in our congregation, and I wrote down some names, but I don't want to start saying people's names because I know how their heads get big. No, I'm just kidding. But seriously, when you look back at your own spiritual growth, I'm sure you could start naming the names of some people that invested in you. And Paul is trying to get us to see that we have that opportunity to invest in others' lives. Because listen, spiritual maturity is a team sport. That's why God has called us together, and he's given us these assignments, these responsibilities. He's the one that gives the increase. And if you're at that spot today that where you're just like, man, I just don't know if I can keep doing it because I'm not seeing any change. Let me just remind you, be not weary in well-doing, for in due season you shall reap if you faint not. And lastly, God is the one that gives us the partnership, and we get the choice to engage in division or discipleship. So I want to encourage us to labor together with God and with others, realizing that spiritual maturity is a group project, because ultimately, what is it that makes the dream work? Teamwork makes the dream work. Let's pray together.
Thanks again for listening today. Grace Baptist Church exists to help people worship God, connect to others, and serve both. If there's anything at all we can do for you, please reach out to us. You can reach us on Facebook as well as online at experiencegrace.church. Hope you have a great day.